Before we get started, I want to take you back to episode number 37. My buddy Jimmy Galeric was the guest, and he's the founder of Around the Neighborhood Oil Change. There's no more time wasted. Avoid sitting in long lines just to get your oil changed. They come out to your home or office at your desired day and time. They use only the top premium oils and filters in all the vehicles that they service. And there's absolutely no gimmicks. Compared to the other guys, there's no hidden fees to service your vehicle. Everything is inclusive. No trickery, no gimmicks. Besides changing oil, Around the Neighborhood Oil Change also does wiper blade replacements, fluid top-offs, and tire pressure checks. They also specialize in commercial services for fleets. Around the Neighborhood Oil Change proudly serves the Middle Tennessee and Memphis, Tennessee areas. For more information or to schedule service, go to their website at aroundtheneighborhoodoilchange.com or call 615-708-2OIL.
Welcome to the 99% Loco Podcast.
Hey there, podcast family. How the heck have you been? I've been gone for just a little bit after taking a little break through the holidays in 2020, which turned into a little bit longer break now into March of 2021. Well, anyway, here we are, another week of the podcast, and this episode brings us to number 51. Each episode, me, your host, Chris Green, am bringing stories of Nashville and Middle Tennessee-based entrepreneurs, business owners, musicians, and other creators. Everyone has a story, their own unique upbringing, and a passion for why they're doing what they're doing. I personally love the sense of community around Nashville and get my kicks from sharing these stories. This week's guests are Tom Cunningham and Anthony Laney, who founded a company called Grazer. The main purpose of Grazer is to source local food while supporting your local farmers. It's an online marketplace for buying and selling meats locally. The Grazer platform links farmers, processors, and consumers for more accessible farm-fresh meats. As farmers, Tom and Anthony experience the headaches in bringing animals to local markets. Restrictions on sales, difficulty attracting new customers, not knowing how much to bring to a market, or which cuts made for a clumsy and expensive system. As consumers, they were frustrated by the complexity, lack of variety, and high costs of trying to find delicious locally raised meats. In comes Grazer. Farmers raising their best livestock, processors making their best cuts, families getting a variety of meats at the best value, stitched together in a seamless online platform. I'll let them tell the rest of the story, so let's get right into it. Here is my conversation with Tom Cunningham and Anthony Laney from Grazer. Well, it's funny, Tom, because I was looking through emails and we started talking like a year ago about trying to get you on this podcast and talk about what you're doing with Grazer. And I was like, wow, a year ago, time's flown by. And I think now's a better time than any time, right?
Absolutely. We've definitely come a lot further than we were then. So now's definitely a better time. That's for sure.
We're going to dig into this about Grazer and what you guys are doing with that. But to me, it's an online marketplace for farm to table. You know, I think your efforts to try to source meat that's more environmentally conscious, supporting local economy, and bringing higher value and money savings to the buyer, really just closing the loop on the local food chain. And, you know, you guys are what this podcast is about, hyper local. So that's awesome. I'm super excited to have you guys on and talk about this.
Thanks so much for having us, Chris. We're really excited to be chatting with you.
Yeah. So, you know, the first thing I want to do is kind of talk about your backgrounds and like, who are you guys? You know, tell me a little bit about your stories before we dig into what you're doing with Grazer.
Go ahead, Anthony.
So, my background is in information technology. I've been in the legal space for 18 years. But during all that time, I've been around agriculture via my family in a way. So my uncle, my relatives all have farms. So growing up, I was around it, but never really dove into just being in agriculture. And then 7 years ago, I moved from DC to Nashville for a company I was working for, and decided that I wanted to live in the country. So my wife and I bought our first property, and it was a small little 4-acre piece of property, but we started that way. And then as we've looked at 7 years now, we're now on 11.5 acres, and we have livestock on it, and we're using it to not only just have that lifestyle that we want, but also to have our kids in that lifestyle and teach them that growing animals and or raising animals in general, and having that just laid back environment of just the country life is just what we've been wanting for our kids and for us ourselves.
Awesome. Yeah. So I actually, my background is in the fire service. I started out in the Air Force and then worked for the city of South Lake Tahoe out in Northern California. And my wife and I resided in Northern Nevada. And I did grow up, I worked on a rice farm, grew safflower, all sorts of stuff, tomatoes, sort of a conventional agriculture, driving tractor 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, harvest and planting, and had a number of different kind of forays. I worked in the viticulture industry as a cellarman on the central coast of California. I worked on a fishing boat. I always loved agriculture in all of its forms. And had I kind of been born into it or something, you know, like the kind of the way you need to be to really pick up and run with agriculture, I most definitely would have found myself in it sooner. But when my wife and I have a small business that's run online, and she kind of grew it to a point where we had some options, and she kind of said, hey, what would it take to convince you to kind of leave the busy and chaotic schedule of the fire service behind for something else? And I said, gosh, if I could raise my kids on a farm, I'd do it in a heartbeat. And, you know, it's been a huge blessing. We're looking all over and landed in Middle Tennessee, which is an absolutely beautiful place, full of opportunity for all sorts of kinds. And so we live on an 84-acre farm, a very small farm. I mean, that might sound big to some, but that's a very small operation. Mm-hmm. We raise cattle and goats and, you know, just sort of homesteader stuff as well. And as I was kind of approaching how to direct market our beef, and we were raising hogs for a while, how to do that, it really started the problems of how to get food from the farm to the local customer really started to become truly I was very aware of them and apparent. It was very apparent as I met farmers and talked to them, how do you do it? You know, how am I going to find my place in the world here doing this? And seeing how much trouble it was for people, I said, well, there's just got to be a better way. So we really set to thinking on that for a while.
Yeah. So how did Anthony come in the picture? I mean, how did you guys meet?
So I kind of dreamed up the general idea from pondering it over a while, just how to the different mechanisms that we could use. And it really been just running around in my head, you know, and I kind of had the general idea of it. And we both went to the same church in Columbia, Tennessee, Central Christian. And one day, you know, my wife and I were teaching in, you know, little kids Bible school, and Anthony was dropping off the daughter. And I said, hey, let me just, you know, just run an idea by you kind of thing. And next thing you know, he was calling me like the next day or the day after. Is like, hey, we need to sit down and talk about this. And next thing you know, we were standing out at the baseball fields at Summertown, chatting about how to build a better way to bring meat from the farm to the consumer.
Yeah. And you forgot it was raining that day.
Yeah. We stood in the rain for probably 45 minutes. And that was sort of the conversation where we decided, all right, you know, I mean, it was really helpful to me because I was really unsure of whether I was going to pursue this because I know enough, and I've, you know, been an entrepreneur before. I've failed before in other endeavors, and I know what goes into it. I had spent the time, the sleepless nights and the late hours, days on end for no payoff, you know, and I just was kind of like, is this something I'm going to pursue? Because I know what it requires to pursue. So if we're going to do this, you know, it's an all or nothing thing. And after that conversation, you know, we were both just sort of, I don't want to say talking each other into it, but as we talk, we just realized, no, we have to do this. We have to do this.
Yes. I know where things are now with you guys, and we're going to talk about that. So how long ago was that you guys started talking about this?
A little over a year and a half ago.
It was actually, yeah. And actually, okay. I think it were coming up on, I forget what I just saw the other day, but it was actually probably March of 2019, Anthony, if you can believe that.
No, I can't.
Well, yeah. So let's dive into this. Grazer, obviously, you know, we know what grazing means. I mean, is there anything that goes into the name of what you're calling this?
Anthony actually came up with it. So, and I love the name. I absolutely love it. Go ahead, Anthony, if you want to answer that.
Yeah. So I was sitting around just kind of, cause some of, kind of back up a little bit about, where this all came from is I did graphic design for a while, just to kind of have that creative side of me. And so I was just sitting there one night, just plugging away of trying to figure out what a name would be very catchy. And out of nowhere, the name Grazer popped up. And so I started going online, seeing how if there was already companies called Grazer and all this other stuff. And there was a couple, there's Graze and there's Grazer, but they were spelled the proper way. And so to kind of make it unique and different, kind of just like how you have Lyft and Uber, the way they spell it is very different and unique. And so I dropped the E. And so I started looking around and it's exactly what you think it is. It's the animals grazing. It's the natural thing that all the animals are doing. And so I tie that together to what we're trying to do is we're trying to make things natural and easy for farmers and consumers and processors to come together and bring not only for the farmers to bring their product, but the processors and the consumers to be able to get what they need at a very natural way of just like animals grazing.
And I love how it invokes even just the variety that we're able to offer, because what's beautiful about the marketplace is it's not, you know, discriminatory in what could be there. It's not like all grass fed or all organic or all grain finished. It's all of the farmers, no matter, you know, how you produce your product, you know, we're welcoming to everybody. And so it's just a great place for sort of the consumer, the customer to come, you know, graze, if you will, through the selection, because it could cover from one end of the spectrum to the other.
Yeah. So let's jump into what you're doing with your crowdfunding. And I guess I wouldn't really call it crowdfunding, because it's more like giving the opportunity to invest in Grazer, right? You launched this thing at the end of February, I believe. You met your first goal in just a few days. And right now you're working on your next goal. So, you know, what was your idea behind that?
Yeah. So that's a great question. Yeah. That's one of our kind of favorite aspects of this is from the beginning, you know, our philosophy was, you know, this is for farmers and this is for customers. And we don't, as much as we are inherently, yes, a middleman, we don't want to be what the middleman has meant to either of those groups in the past. You know, we want to be like the unifier, the bridge between farmer and customer, not just, you know, the middleman, you know. And so we said, what's a great way to do that? And we had sort of become familiar with regulation crowdfunding, which isn't like Kickstarter where you're just giving money, you know, to a cause, but you're actually investing the money in the company for some sort of return. It can be done in a lot of different ways. And we're doing, you know, a very direct priced round. And I'm not allowed to speak about the terms details due to the regulations for it, but like we're happy to direct people to check it out. But the overall arching philosophy of it is we want to be owned by our stakeholders, you know, the farmers, the processors, and the discerning customers who will be using the platform. I mean, we just can't think of a better way than being owned by the people that this matters to. So that was kind of the reason why we pursued this form rather than a more conventional venture capital approach, which it's not to say that nothing's off the table for us, but we just think let's start right at, you know, the people we want to serve and see if they want to buy into this. And so far we've had a really great response.
Yeah. So where are you guys at? You know, are you still in development? Are you doing testing? Are you looking at launching soon? or are you already doing, you know, some beta testing, or where are you guys at with this?
So we have completed development of the software. We are in the middle of QAing everything and getting everything ready to go. And so we are looking to launch soon. It's one of the big things that we are ready to kind of start announcing and testing. And we are going to be testing in Middle Tennessee as our beta testing. And then once that that happens and we kind of iron out all the little things, then we're going to start hitting all the other markets.
You know, you think about this as being like, I guess, is it going to be an app or is it web-based or both? Or how's this going to work?
So it's web-based right now. And with the way Android and Apple is, you can actually go to our site and download it as a app, and then kind of just, because their site is mobile friendly anyways. So if you download it onto your Android or on your iPhone, it's going to act exactly like an app. You just don't have to go to the App Store or Google Play Store to get to it.
Yeah. And you guys are extremely focused on local. Are there any other services or companies out there like this right now?
There really isn't. A lot of people, what we found in a lot of research and talking to people is when you hear farm to fork, you think it's 100% in your backyard. Well, it really isn't. A lot of the times that these restaurants or people are getting farm to fork, it's usually coming across state lines or a long ways where it's getting trucked in, or it's not really truly local. And so what we're focusing on is giving a platform that is truly local, and people are not traveling. The beef is not traveling 50 to 60 miles. It's traveling 10, 15 miles, and you're getting it right in your backyard.
And even we recognize, you know, like ButcherBox or Crowd Cow or Oink, you know, some of these other companies that are, you know, purchasing meat online, if you want to look at it from that perspective. And all of those are the product is traveling an exorbitant distance, and shipping adds an exorbitant amount of cost. So it really becomes a more of a niche product, because not the average family or not every family can afford, you know, to add the shipping costs that are attached to that sort of service. And so we're really trying to really and truly like make it work in every way. And the only way to do that is to kind of make it work on a hyper local level. And for most people may not realize, I didn't fully realize that the scale to which our food moves in distance. And, you know, the cows that we see along, you know, Interstate 65 or, you know, 40, they might go all the way to Nebraska or Kansas City, and then end up back in Kroger just down the street from us. And that's kind of crazy, even not only from like a financial standpoint, but a environmental impact standpoint, that we, in this day and age of technology and decentralized platforms, we have the ability to build a better system. So we just believe that the time to do that is now. And at least for local meat, the platform to do that is going to be Grazer Market.
Yeah. So let's talk about more who would use Grazer. I mean, would this be, you know, just like individual families like myself? Is it restaurants, grocery stores, or, you know, what's the intention?
I think it could be all of the above, but I think the initial I see is you have the families and then you have restaurants, because farm to table has become such a huge thing nowadays that restaurants kind of love that idea. And so we would love to see that. Plus we also love to see families be able to support local, not only just in their communities, but just all around them. And I think that just builds a better community in general.
Anthony said it pretty well. Yeah. It's just, you know, we're looking, the typical customer I often use, you know, like, the soccer mom or, you know, whoever's grocery shopping. I think that the last year, a lot of people have started to look differently at how they acquire food and a little bit of food security. And when it's kind of a combination of like food security, supporting local, and extremely high quality, like Whole Foods all in one. So it's like you're able to, the entire transaction will in entirely stay in the local economy, which is pretty neat from that standpoint. And at the same time, you know, you can be shopping for, you know, like a Jersey beef, which might be like less expensive, much more affordable potentially, or you could be purchasing, you know, a Wagyu, you know, beef, which is super high end. It's all there for anybody's budget or taste. So we really want to have a mass appeal, and also like be available and you know, fit everybody's budget as well. And that will be determined by, you know, what growers are present in each different market. But like, if you look at, you know, Nashville, greater Nashville area, for as an example, I mean, there's literally everything from, you know, great pasture raised Jersey beef available to the highest end Wagyu. It's all there. So it's just a matter of, you know, I think a lot of different customers fit our bill, everything from like the soccer mom to the restaurateur who wants to simply and affordably source locally.
Yeah, so you know, I'm picturing this as like a online marketplace like Amazon, or I think I heard you compared to like an Airbnb in another interview you guys did. I mean, is that essentially what this is? You go on, you know, you pick what type of meat you want and where it's coming from, or
yeah. So the bottom, farmers can create a profile that features sort of themselves as the farmer, what their philosophy is, how they raise their animals and their farm, as well, just sort of like how their farm works and what sets their product apart from another. And we have the ability for them to put pictures, videos, you know, all sorts of stuff to kind of demonstrate to their customer and even like keep in touch with their customer. And then all of their personal listings would be available there as well. The way the logic is driven, though, is when an end customer comes to the site, they're asked, you know, what their location is, their zip code. And then from there, they'll be asked to select a processor, and it might be the nearest processor to them, or it might be their favorite preferred processor as they get to know them over time or something. And then from there, it will show you any products, any cow shares or hog shares that are available via your preferred processor. So from there, it could be a number of different farms, whether you're looking for beef, pork, lamb, or goat. That's going to be the initial offerings. And the consumer will be able to kind of take a look at it from that point of view. And yeah, and to continue on, sorry, there have been a lot of comparisons, and I don't want to upset anybody with, you know, tiring out the Airbnb of meat, or, you know, but it really is comparable because the strengths for the farmers and the consumers by aggregating everybody under one roof. Right now, for those who are kind of familiar with maybe purchasing local or even through a farm's website, you know, every farm is their own individual, you know, online store. And it's sort of like 1,000 points of light spread across, you know, the world and the internet, where when we bring everybody under one roof, it's kind of similar to how it used to be, how it is with Airbnb renting a place in, you know, Estes Park, Colorado, where you might not be familiar with, and now you can see all of them in one place, where, you know, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, before those kinds of sites, you had to go search out that individual landlord who's renting out a short-term rental and find the website wherever that is. So we're kind of just modernizing and aggregating everybody under one roof as far as just presentation to the customers, so that when you think local meat, you think grazer, and then all of the farms are there. It's just going to be a simple way for customers. And I think it's going to benefit the farmers immensely to bring more people to them regularly, expose them to people they otherwise would not have reached from a marketing standpoint. And there's a lot of things we can do for both the customers and the farmers because of the analytics and the data that we're able to capture. For example, like the farmer sets their price, which is also a huge plus for them because oftentimes markets are setting, you know, the price. Now, of course, the market has to support the price they're setting, but we don't tell them. Grazer does not tell them what beef sells for. They say what it sells for. And so we can actually give them great feedback on the analytics of, in your area, beef is selling for X amount of dollars in the last 30 days. And so they can kind of get an idea of how to price themselves in relation to the average according to their product. And we have some of the same ability analytics wise to serve the customer, the end customer as well.
You know, let's go back to the WeFunder you're doing right now. You know, is that the goal to get the investors? And I know you said there's some regulations, you can't talk about a lot of this, but, you know, is the goal for that funding just to get you guys launched? And, you know, I guess the second part would be, you know, what are your guys' plan to grow, you know, after WeFunder, once this starts to catch on and go crazy, hopefully?
Sure. So yeah, right now we're looking to raise $250,000 total, and that is going to be used primarily to launch the platform, sales, marketing, and then a big part of the launch of the platform is going to be further feature implementation. And a lot of the software that is built is built to serve the processors, because they're really like the hub of the wheel. They're a critical aspect. And so we want to be very agile as we do launch the product and have an ability to roll out new features for all three of our stakeholders, the farmers, the processors, or the end customer, in order to make their, you know, the site most useful and most beneficial to them. And I'm going to, you know, it's going to be just an absolute sales, we're going to be onboarding as many processors as we possibly can so that we can create as many markets as we can, bring on farmers into those marketplaces, and then start you know, marketing it out to customers once we have processors and farmers in place. And we're actually shooting for, it's kind of a nationwide launch with a platform that's you know, online and just software scalability is pretty much as fast as you can and responsibly grow, right? So we're not really putting a cap on how quickly we want to expand. It's just going to be a matter of just sort of getting that snowball rolling and getting the word out to processors about just what an awesome piece of software we've created for them, because we really need their buy-in.
Yeah, well, this is really awesome, guys. I don't want to take up too much more of your time. You know, if someone was interested in this and wanted to, you know, come on board as an investor or even find out more about what you guys are doing or when you're going to launch, how could they do that?
They can go to wefunder.com and then /grazer, and it's GRAZR. And if they want to know even more about us, they can go to grazer.press.
And we're also on Instagram, Grazer Market, and Facebook as Grazer Market.
Yeah, I'm glad we were able to finally make this happen. I'm excited to see, you know, when this thing launches. And
hey, thank you so much. We're so grateful to be here with you.
Well, there you go. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. As always, thank you for listening. If you'd like to get a hold of me, I'd love to hear from you. You can email me directly at 99%localpod@gmail.com. Or you can actually drop by the contact page on the website and send a voice message that may appear in a future episode. You can find the website at 99%localpod.com. While you're there, make sure you catch up on all of those past episodes that you might have missed. If you'd like to support the show, you can do it in a few different ways. Please follow the podcast on Instagram and Facebook at 99% Local Pod. Leave a review wherever you listen to the podcast. And the best thing you can possibly do is share the podcast with your friends who might want to check it out. Lastly, consider contributing to the podcast on a one-time or ongoing basis. All contributions that I receive, 10% of that goes to the Well Outreach Food Pantry in Spring Hill, Tennessee. Well, until next week, stay safe and be kind to those around you.